Welcome to Unpacking the Box podcast, where we unpack incredible stories and experiences. It's about amplifying those unheard voices, untold stories, and changing narratives left and right. There is so much that can fit into a box. Sometimes you just need to know what's in it or how you're going to feel when unpacking it. Sometimes it can be uncomfortable to unpack, but it's very necessary for the betterment of ourselves and others.
Mommy, I carry you with me wherever I go, with whatever I do. I will honor you daily. I'm going to continue making you proud. Thank you for believing in me, for loving me, for taking care of me, for praying for me, for advocating for me. I know that you're watching over me and watching over us. You have given me even more purpose. You have taught me well. I had the opportunity to learn from the best. I love you so much. I miss you so much. May you continue resting peacefully. I got it from here. And don't worry, we're gonna be okay. There is a saying, you don't know what other people are going through behind closed doors. The battles, the struggles, the tears, the pain, the depression, and the anxiety. You know, these things really love to reveal themselves behind closed doors. It is something about you sitting in silence and sitting in the darkness and sitting, you know, in sadness. And when you're alone, it's like you're in your most vulnerable state. And that is when they attack. It's like their tunnel way in. It's a gateway. So I want to open the door and I want to let you all in on what I've been struggling with behind closed doors. So at the beginning of September, or I would say mid-September, I was sitting in a hospital room visiting my mother, my best friend, my favorite person in the entire world, my first true and genuine love. I was sitting in her hospital room for 8 hours straight or more, watching her struggle. And when I wasn't at the hospital, I was calling up to the hospital, checking in on her, making sure that, you know, her medical team and you know, was doing everything that they could and everything that was necessary. I was making sure she was getting the correct medication. I was making sure she wasn't in pain. I was making sure, you know, she was eating. I mean, I was making sure that everything was going the way that it was supposed to go and that she was being treated properly in the hospital. And when she could talk, I would call her on her cell phone directly to check on her just to see how she was feeling and to make sure that she was okay, because I was always, always worried about her. I watched her fight. I watched her experience pain. And although I know this might sound crazy to some, maybe, I don't know, but I felt like I felt her pain sometimes when she was having pain. I can't really explain it, but I felt like I physically would feel what she was feeling to a certain degree sometimes when I was sitting in the hospital watching her struggle. I felt like I was feeling that physically, which was really horrible. But you know what? Even in her pain, and let me just say, before we even got to where she was in the hospital, some people do know and some people don't, but my mother had multiple sclerosis. And she had it for a long, long, long time. And I'm not sure if you guys are aware of what that is and what that does to your body, but I'm going to tell you. First of all, when she first told me she had that, I was like, oh my God, I've got to look this up. I got to see what this is. But basically, over time, MS damages your central nervous system. Basically, a person pretty much deteriorates over time. And it really, you know, and everybody is different. You know, some people are managing it very well. And then others, not so much, because it really affects your body differently. It affects everyone differently. And so even before we got to the part where she was at the hospital, she was, you know, dealing with that from day to day. But you know what? Even in her struggle and even in her pain, she was still there for others. She was still praying for others, giving others encouragement. She was still being present for others, even though she had her own health obstacles. Because that is the type of amazing woman that she was. That was the type of woman she was. Even in her pain and distress, she was still thinking about others and praying for others. My mother was a praying woman. So the events that transpired during her hospital stay, the only way that I can describe it is that it was like being on a roller coaster ride, y'all. A terrifying roller coaster ride. There were so many ups and downs and so many emotions. You know, my family and I felt hopeful at certain points because she seemed like she was getting better. And I was happy and we were all happy. We were like, okay, she's getting better. We're getting there. There was a plan in place for when she was going to be released and all that. And we watched movies together in the hospital at one point and we were laughing. We were talking. We were just having a good old time, making the best of, you know, a really horrible situation. But, you know, she began to decline. And it happened so fast. She had two trips to the ICU. Now, after her first trip to the ICU, she was better. And again, we were hopeful. We said, okay, you know, she had to be in ICU for 24 hours, you know, so they could get her breathing under control. And she's better now. So we were like, okay, we're going in the right direction. You know, she's going to be okay. But ultimately, she ended up in hospice. Now, I knew what hospice was, but I had never visited anyone in hospice. And I never, you know, was in it. And so this was really, really a dark and somber experience for our family. Just walking on the other end of the hospital. I mean, it was kind of like the lights were dimmed and it was quiet. It was really dark. And I often wonder what it was like for my mother. You know, I wonder if she could hear us talking to her, if she could feel me rubbing her head and I would rub her head and her hands and her arms a lot. And I wondered if she could feel that. And but one thing, you know, one of her better moments in the hospital, you know, I always told her I loved her. But, you know, I said, I love you. And she was like, I love you. I love all three of you. Because at the time it was three people, three of us up there. And she was like, I love all three of you. I love you. And we would always say that. And I was happy about that. But when she couldn't talk anymore, I wondered, you know, when she was laying in the bed and, you know, not awake and not able to talk, if she could hear us, if she knew that we were still there with her. And I just wondered. I know how our experience was, but I just wondered what it was like for her, you know, because when you go to hospice, they pretty much take you off of everything. Well, except for if you're on a ventilator, you know, they have to get permission from the family to take you off of that. And she was on a ventilator. And but as far as medications that keep you alive, they take you off of that. And I watched all of this, you guys. I watched them remove her machines and her medicine. She was still on the ventilator. And but they removed, you know, all the medications that were keeping her alive, just, you know, one by one as it would finish, you know, they would take it away. And which was really horrible. And so I just wondered, you know, what that experience was like for her, you know. So I was thinking in my mind, when I was in hospice, when I was in the hospice room with her, I was thinking to myself, and I said to myself, I said, "Mommy, I know you're tired, and I know that you've been fighting hard to stay, especially for me," because she would always tell me that when she was no longer here, that she didn't want me to feel like I was alone. She would always say that to me, because it's always just been me and her, you know, me and her. My mother was a single mom, and you know, it was always just me and her. And so I told her, I said, "Mommy, I know you're tired. I know you've been fighting hard to stay." I said, "But you can go now." This is what I'm saying to myself. I said, "You can go now because I know you're tired. I know you're trying to hold on for me and for the kids." I said, "But you can go. It's okay." But y'all, only I couldn't bring myself to actually release those words from my tongue. I literally said that stuff to myself in my mind, but I couldn't bring myself to bring those words out. The words didn't come out. I just couldn't say it. And so we watched her slip away. And that is so hard. I don't know if you have ever experienced just watching a person slip away. That is so hard, and it's so tough. And then in the midst of all of this, I mean, I was so stressed. I was in shock. I wasn't eating. I wasn't drinking. I was barely sleeping. There was a lot going on at the time. And I mean, that was just hard to watch. On October 10th, 2023, my mother passed away. I had been in hospitals before, but never, ever did I witness anything quite like what I witnessed this time around. It was different. It was eerie. It was traumatic. Not to mention, y'all, in the middle of the night when I was attempting to get rest, you know, when I wasn't at the hospital and in the middle of the night, I was trying to get rest as best as I could, even though I couldn't. I mean, I was so tired. I was hungry. I was thirsty, but I felt I couldn't do those things because you know what? And, you know, and again, this might sound crazy to someone who hasn't been through this, but I felt like my mother was laying in that hospital bed and she was, you know, so sick that why did I deserve to be eating and drinking and sleeping? Why did I deserve to be comfortable in my bed and doing all these things that she couldn't do? That's how my mind, that's how I was thinking, even though I know it sounds crazy because I know that I need to take care of myself because I have kids to be here for. I knew that. But in my mind, because I was going through so much, that's how I was thinking. And so, you know, in the middle of the night when I was attempting to get rest, I would get calls from the nurse at the hospital before my mother went to, right before she went to ICU. And I would get calls and it was always bad news. They were always telling me something bad that was going on with my mother, you know. And then ultimately, the last time they caught me, they were telling me that they have to put her on the ventilator. Well, it wasn't the last time. It was the second to the last time, but that they had to put her on a ventilator or she went into distress and things like this. So, you know, getting those calls in the middle of the night really unlocked a new anxiety for me. Like I literally, when the phone rings, I'm like, I get anxiety because, you know, the hospital called me so much and they always called me to tell me something bad. It was never good. And it's just, I would dread answering whenever my phone would ring. So after I watched the funeral home come and take my mother away, I was in shock. I still think I'm kind of in a little bit of shock and disbelief. But I feel like the whole time that, you know, we were in the hospital, I was in shock. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing and what was happening. So the funeral home, they came to take her, you know, got to spend some time with her before they came. Because they didn't come for like 2 hours, something like that. And I'm just thinking to myself, I cannot believe my mother passed away. I can't believe. And it was like an out-of-body experience. I was there, but I wasn't there. I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. You know, seeing her hooked up to all those machines and things and seeing them poke her and give her different medicines and just, you know, all those things. I was still in shock because I just couldn't believe that this was happening. I'm like, I couldn't believe it. So I had to make her arrangements, and I'm her only child. I have no siblings, well, as far as with my mom. And so I had to make her arrangements, something that I had never experienced ever before in my life. And, you know, as soon as I entered the funeral home, I felt a hot flash come over me, and I was so nervous. My stomach felt nauseous. I felt like I was going to throw up, you know. Just the thought of, I'm literally discussing my mother in past tense made me sick to my stomach. The thought that I was about to go into the casket room and pick out a casket and discuss her services made me sick to my stomach. I didn't cry. No tears came out. And even when I was sitting in the hospital with her, and I was seeing all this stuff that was happening, I was in shock. And when I was sitting with her, you know, waiting for the funeral home to come and pick her up, there were no tears. I was just rubbing her arm, and I was in shock. I was in shock. It didn't hit me yet that my mother, even though I can see that she's gone, I can see that she's sick, I can see all these things that are going on, but I was shocked. I was shocked. Shocked. I just couldn't accept it, I guess. Too. I guess it was a combination of being shocked and also not being able to accept it. And, you know, my body, it's like my mind and my body was out of whack. You know, it wasn't connecting. It wasn't registering, you know? And so I'm at the funeral home and I'm just feeling all kinds of crazy. And because I'm like, I can't believe this. I can't believe I got to make these decisions, you know? And so I make the arrangements and we set everything up. And that too, you know, even with me feeling all those things that I felt, I still feel like that was sort of an out of body experience too. I really felt like I was there, but I wasn't there. If you guys can kind of understand that. So, and even after I made the funeral arrangements, when I was at home, I was so busy with just, you know, making sure everything was going to be just right and just perfect, like the way she wanted it. And I don't know, I didn't really have time to stop because I was going and going and going and going and going. And I didn't have time to stop and think and to do anything other than just take care of this business and take care of that and take care of this. That's all I was doing, was taking care of everything. And so we get to the viewing, the date of the viewing, and I'm really feeling, you know, nervous again. And I'm feeling like my stomach is hurting. I'm feeling hot. I feel like I'm probably having a panic attack, basically. It's anxiety. And with a mixture of grief, you know. And so I went to the viewing, and, you know, they pull the curtain back because you get to go early before the public comes. And, well, before other family comes or whatever. And you get to just make sure everything's okay. So they pull the curtain back. And I saw her for the first time since, you know, that time I was in the hospital, and I watched them roll her out of the hospital. And she looked like she was sleeping. She looked beautiful and peaceful. And finally, she had peace. And finally, she could rest. Her hair, her makeup, everything was beautiful. And you know how some people, like, when they're sick and you can tell that they have been sick, like maybe they have lost weight or they just, you know, their skin tone changed. And because a lot of times when you're sick, you your body physically goes through something, and you know, physically you can tell when someone is sick and has been that sick. You know what I mean? But in her case, she looked like herself. She didn't look like she had been through anything. She, even when we were with her, you know, right after she passed away in the hospital, she didn't look, you know, like she had been sick. And she was really, 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 really sick. She looked peaceful, and she just looked so beautiful. And I just broke down. I broke down as I looked at her lying in her casket. I just started crying and crying. The last time that I had cried like that was when I was in bed in the middle of the night during one of the times when they called me and they told me that they had to put her on a ventilator because she was in respiratory distress. And then when I hung up that phone, I just started crying. And that was the last time that I had cried. So, just seeing her like that. It was finally registering to me that she was gone and she was not coming back. Not until her viewing, during her services and afterwards, that is when I realized that she is not coming back. And every day after that hurt more and more. So after her services, I didn't go outside for days. You know, I was just laying in bed. I didn't want to do anything. I couldn't do anything physically. I was just broken down. I was sad. I was mad, and I was frustrated, and I still am, you know, because I'm still grieving. And, you know, grief has no limit, as we all know. And it also looks different. And, you know, how we deal with things look different for each and every one of us. And am I okay? No, absolutely not. And that's okay. I was her only child and she left me, you know. But I know how much pain she was in. I know how much she was struggling just in the last 2 years before we got to that point. I knew that this was her peace and that this was the time that she would finally get to rest. And I know she was tired. And even though I know all of that, the selfish part, the selfish, me being selfish, wanting to still, you know, have her here in the flesh. But I keep trying to tell myself that if I have her here, then that means she will be suffering and she'll be in pain. And I don't want that because I literally worried about her all day, every day. You know, she was a big part of my daily routine. There was not one day that went by that I did not talk to my mother. I talked to my mother at least 1 to 4 times every day. I saw her on the weekends. And sometimes during the week, you know, me and her were so close, You know, literally my whole day revolved around her, and she was my biggest supporter. She was everything. She was everything. So while I'm still grieving, you know, I did want to get back to my podcast because I love it. My mother loved it. You know, it is my piece of joy. It is my peace and, you know, happiness. She was so proud of me and proud of everything that I accomplished. But in addition to that, I went back to the podcast because I needed my mind to be occupied, because depression is trying to get a hold of me every day. So for me, it's about life or death, because when I'm alone in this bed, and even though I have family around me, you know, depression convinces you that you're alone. And then when you have depression and grief tag teaming you, it's really a matter of life and death. And I know that I have to be here for my family. I have to be here for my kids. I know if I left, you know, it would break them, just like how I'm broken. And I feel a major void. I know I can't do that. So for me, this helps me. This helps me, you know, having this little bit of peace and happiness, you know, in my day. And it gives me purpose, because I feel like my purpose is even bigger than before. You know, I have my mother watching over me, you know, and so I have to always move in excellence and just, you know, be the woman that she raised me to be. And that is what I'm going to do. And so, you know, everybody deals with grief differently, you know, but for me, I definitely needed to get back to work, you know, just to occupy my mind, to really, you know, try to combat this sadness that's really trying to convince me that I shouldn't be here, when I know I should be here, when I know that I'm loved, I love myself, and I know there are many other people who love me. And so this is a part of that. And I'm also seeing a grief counselor, you know, once a week, which is really helpful too. You know, I know that I needed help. I realized that, you know, I need help. I have experienced loss before, but I have never, you know, experienced the loss of a parent, of a mother. And, you know, this is quite different. And so I recognize that I needed help. I know I need help. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm also a part of a support group as well, for women who have lost their mothers. Actually, two support groups, you know, for people in general who have lost their parents. And then there's one support group, I think it's called Daughters Who Have Lost Their Mothers, something to that effect. I'm a part of two groups and I have a counselor. And so I am, you know, taking the necessary steps to get myself help, to help me not get over this, but just, you know, get through this and still be able to function and live my life. Because I know my mother will want me to keep going and will want me to be here for my children and will want me to, you know, continue doing what I love to do. I know she wouldn't want me in, you know, a dark hole somewhere thinking that I'm not supposed to be here, you know? So I'm definitely doing what I need to do to make sure that, you know, I get the help that I need. And so, you know, I just could never have, and would not ever want to fathom, you know, such a loss. But, you know, here I am. And so I have to figure out how to, you know, cope and live through it. You know, I don't wish this pain on anyone. And if you have experienced this pain, I am so sorry. I'm so sorry for your loss, and I'm so sorry for what you're going through. But, you know, and unfortunately, I can tell you that I know what you're going through, and I know what it feels like. This pain is different. This pain is terrible. You know, it's terrible. I feel a huge void. You know, I feel like my heart is broken. I feel like the protective shield that has been protecting me, her prayers, I feel like that has been lifted off. That's just what it feels like. I feel like I'm not protected
anymore in this world, you know? I'm also a praying woman, and that's who's been, you know, that's who's been waking me up every morning. I feel like God has been waking me up, and so for that, I'm grateful, you know? I'm still waking up every day, and all I can do is my best, and try to do my best. I am trying to do the best that I can do, because I'm going to be honest, a lot of times, really every morning, I don't want to get up. I don't want to get up. I don't want to do anything, but I do. I push myself to get up, and I try my best every day. And I know some days it is okay just to lay in the bed if that's what you want to do, because sometimes I do that. Sometimes, especially on weekends, sometimes I just still lay in the bed because I'm just like, you know, I just don't feel like doing anything. I don't feel like talking. I don't feel like doing anything. And I know that that's okay too. But I do, for the most part, for my well-being, you know, push myself to get up in the morning. And, you know, I just do my best. I do the best that I can do. And that's what I'm going to keep doing. But, you know, Thanksgiving was difficult for me. And, you know, on top of losing her, I had to have a thyroid biopsy at the hospital, you know, which it wasn't the same hospital that my mom had been in, but, you know, still it was a hospital. And just going in the hospital triggered me because I remembered just being in the hospital and what happened. And so, but I had to go get a thyroid biopsy because I had been putting off my doctor's appointments and things when I was, you know, going through everything with my mom. And so I resumed that, and I went and had a thyroid ultrasound, and my doctor called me back and said, you know, well, we see some nodules that look a little bit different than the other ones and a little bit larger. So we want to, you know, get that biopsy to make sure. And so I went to the hospital right before Thanksgiving, and I had that biopsy, and that was painful, very painful. And then so by the time Thanksgiving came, I was upset because, you know, my mom wasn't around, and then I was in pain because I was recovering from that. They stuck my neck so many times, and I had bruising on my neck. It looked like I got beat up, y'all. It looked like my neck was, I mean, it was bad, and I couldn't even take pictures. It's way better now. But yeah, I was just dealing with so much. And so, you know, but thank God those results are benign. There's no cancer. Thank God. I thank God so, so, so much for that. But yeah, despite how hard it all was as far as Thanksgiving, you know, we still had a nice dinner and we still had a nice day. And for that, I am grateful. Thank God for my kids and my husband who, you know, really, really uplift my spirits every day. My kids are the ones like, you know, you're going to be okay, mommy. You still have us. You're going to be okay. And so, you know, they constantly uplift me. And goodness, oh my God, thank you to so many people in the creative community, fellow podcasters and writers, and you know who you are. You know, you have been checking on me daily. You know, you have been reaching out to me. You have been praying for me. I really appreciate you. I'm grateful for you. You are helping me. If you don't know, you are helping me. If you have still been supporting me, you know, in my absence when I wasn't recording, you know, you continue to support me now. I thank you so much. I am grateful for you all. For you all who are listening right now, I am grateful for each and every one of you. Know that you reaching out, I can't even talk, y'all. Know that, you know, you reaching out to me, praying for me, whatever, in whatever capacity, you know, whatever, it helps me. It helps me. And I want to thank you so much for everything. Thank you for your condolences, all of you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you all. I'm so grateful for you all, and I love you all. So all I can say is, you know, God is good, and I'm alive, I'm well, you know, and my family is good. I have a great, great, great support system, and, you know, I am, I'm not okay, but that's okay. That's okay. I miss my mother so, 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 so bad. And I'm going to be honest, I'm not looking forward to Christmas because, you know, that was her all-time favorite holiday. She was the queen of Christmas, Mariah Carey Jr., okay? And I am too. But, you know, but we're gonna get through it, and I'm going to do the best that I can. I did decorate because, you know, decorations make me so happy. And I had some of her decorations that she passed down to me. And so that made me happy. And so, you know, I'm going to try to just make the best of it, especially for my kids, because they love Christmas too. But it is going to be hard. So I just ask that you guys continue to pray for me and my family. You know, that's all, you know, that we can do. That's all that we can do. So my mother, Elaine, was so loving, so kind, sweet, and just a beautiful person inside and out. She was so giving. She loved animals. She loved people. She loved her family. Despite any obstacles that she had to endure, she still managed to be there for others in need. She was a single mother, and she went above and beyond for me. She was a great grandmother. She loved her grandchildren, and she spoiled them so much. To me, she was the absolute epitome of a great mother. She was a praying mother. We talked all day, every day. I called her so much because I worried about her. She was a huge part of my life and my everyday routine, and she still is. Even though I know she's not here in the physical, I know she's here in the spiritual. I am still trying to adjust, and I may never adjust to that. I'm never going to be the same ever again. So I do want to share something that I wrote in her obituary to her. When we were in the hospital, and my mother was having a lot of health obstacles, she said something to me that really broke my heart, and I felt so helpless. She said, "I just can't win." She said, "I just can't win." And that hurt me to my core, because I feel like, you know, from a medical standpoint, there wasn't anything that I could do to help the situation. All I could do was just be there and tell her that I loved her. And I told her, when she said that, I said, "I'm so sorry." I said, "I'm so sorry that, you know, you have to go through this. You shouldn't have to go through this. And I'm so sorry." But it really hurt my heart, and it stuck with me, and it will be with me forever and ever. And so I wrote this to my mom. I'm not going to read her whole obituary, because I feel like that's sacred, you know, but I do want to share this, you know, what I wrote, because I want to honor her. And she loved my podcast so much. To my mother, I sit in infinite gratitude and in great admiration of the insurmountable strength you bestowed. You are my blueprint. Thank you for showing me true, unconditional, and genuine love. Thank you for gracing me with all the tools I needed to grow through this thing called life. You were the greatest mother. I aspire to be that for my children daily. Thank God for you. I love you so much. You won. With eternal love, Linnea. And with that, I'm going to leave you for now. Thank you so much for listening. I love y'all. All right, y'all. I'm out.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Unpacking the Box Podcast, where we unpack it all. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.
Not only is Linnea an amazing podcaster, she is also an independent entrepreneur. Check out her many creative endeavors, such as her women's magazine, Unpacking Her Magazine, which highlights women in business and in all creative areas. In addition, she has an online store, Unpacking Hoodies and Tees, that entails words that will be sure to uplift you. She is a self-published author of 2 books, and counting that can be found on Amazon. You can visit and learn more about Linnea's projects by clicking on the link in the show's notes, or visit Linnea's Instagram page at unpacking_the_box_podcast and click on the link in the bio.